Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. For the next 2 weeks, Pardes is bringing Purim to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Nechama Goldman Barish coming to you from Jerusalem. As I was preparing this second half of the Pardes Daily Challenge, I discovered that the order of the Mishnayot in chapters 3 and 4 in the Mishnah do not line up with that of the Gemara. In other words, the Gemara flips chapters 3 and 4. So I had to make a decision. Do I follow the order of the Mishnah as originally presented? Or do I follow the order of the Gemara because many people learn Mishnah only in context of the Gemara, and this could be confusing? And in fact, the Gemara's decision to flip the order of the chapters in many ways makes more sense because chapter 4 in the Mishnah starts out with a law pertaining to Megillah reading, while chapter 3 in the Mishnah starts with an unrelated topic about money that can be used to purchase a synagogue. In the end, I decided to maintain the order of the Mishnah because this is a podcast series on the Mishnah, but I could not refrain from giving this brief explanation to avoid confusion to listeners. The third parak of Mishnah in the Tractate Megillah focuses on the synagogue. Batei Knesset, as places of prayer, existed even while the temple was still standing, where people could participate in communal prayer and public Torah reading while the sacrificial service was being performed by the Kohanim, the priests, in the temple. The community synagogue served other functions as well, including as a schoolhouse for children, also for older students, and a gathering place for members of the community to hear the teachings of the rabbi or to deal with communal issues such as charity. Our chapter examines the holiness invested in these structures, what appropriate behavior in them should be, how they should be treated when they fall into disuse, and whether they can be sold or traded. Because this is a particularly long Mishnah, I'm going to read a few lines and translate so the listener does not get too lost in an ongoing, very long piece of text and followed by a long piece of explanation. Okay, so let's get started. The first Mishnah in chapter 3. B'nei ha'ir shemachru rechova shel ir, lokchin b'damav beit ha'kneset lokchin teva, teva lokchin mitpachot, mitpachot lokchin svarim, svarim lokchin Torah. So we're now going to examine what can be done with the proceeds of either sacred space or objects infused with sanctity that are sold. What can I do with the money from the sale? So it starts off by telling me that residents of a town that sold Rechova Shel Ir, a town square, the town square was considered at times as a place used for public prayer. And so it had a certain degree of sanctity. So even though certainly more minimal than a synagogue, nonetheless, a community in which the town square could be used for public prayer, it became infused with sanctity. And if you sell the town square, you can use the proceeds to buy a synagogue. Well, what if you sell the Beit HaKnesset? What can you do with that money? So you can buy a teva, the ark, because that's where you would house the Torah scrolls. Torah scrolls have more sanctity than a synagogue. Well, what if you sold the teva? Well, then you can purchase wrapping cloths, what are called mitpachot, for the sacred scrolls. Well, what if you sold the wrapping cloths? Well, then you can purchase scrolls for Nevi'im and Ketuvim, for the prophets and the writings. Of course, in the time of the Mishnah, everything was written on scrolls, on parchment. And so the five books of Moses, the Torah, had even greater sanctity. But the scrolls with the Nevi'im and Ketuvim, like the Megillah, upon which Esther is written, Megillat Esther, had also a degree of sanctity. And if you sell those, you can then purchase a Torah scroll. Okay, so that is the first piece of the Mishnah. Let us continue. Aval im machru Torah lo yikhu svarim, svarim lo yikhu mitpachot, mitpachot lo yikhu teva, teva lo yikhu beit ha'kneset. Beit ha'kneset lo yikhu et ha'rechov v'kein b'motrehen. It doesn't work in the opposite direction. If you sold a Torah scroll, you may not use the money to purchase scrolls of Nevi'im and Ketuvim. If you sold the scrolls of the Nevi'im and Ketuvim, the prophets and the writings, you may not purchase wrapping cloths for the scrolls of Torah. If you sold the wrapping cloths, you may not purchase a teva. If you sold a teva, you may not purchase a synagogue. If you sold a synagogue, you may not purchase a town square. And the idea there is you can't sell something and then use the money to buy something of lesser sanctity. Olin biktusha, velo yordim biktusha. In other words, you can only go upwards with regard to sanctity. You can't diminish, have anything be diminished with regard to sanctity. So since the Torah scroll is considered to be one of the most sacred objects, you can't be selling it and then buying things like nevim and ketuvim that have lesser sanctity. Okay, now we're in the last piece of the Mishnah. Ein mochrin et shal rabim liyachid mipnei shemoridin oto mikdushato, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, amru lo imkein af lo mi'ir gdola li'ir ktana. And now the last clause talks about the limitation that if there are any surplus funds, in other words, if after you sell an item and purchase something of greater sanctity, there remain additional unused funds, the leftover funds are subject to the same principle and may only be used to purchase something of greater sanctity than that of the original item. So they may not sell an object belonging to the community to an individual, even if the object will be used for the same purpose, because that's a downgrade in sanctity for an individual to use something that a community of people once used. This is the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. And what his colleague said to them is, by that logic, it should not be permitted to sell a sacred object from Ir Gdola to Ir Ktana, from a large town to a small town, but we obviously permit such a sale. And so it must also be permitted to sell such an object to an individual. The Mishnah we just read is concerned with the following five principles. Number one, holiness accumulates within certain items used for worship and study. Number two, if the holy item is sold, the holiness transfers into the funds for which it was sold. Number three, the holiness remains in all of the funds, including excess funds, following a future purchase. Number four, holiness is not uniform. It's distinguished by degree. Not all holy things are regarded equally. Number five, we raise the level of holiness and we do not lower the level of holiness. Okay, so this Mishnah taught us that an object of Kedusha, holiness, can only be sold if something with a higher level of holiness will be purchased with the proceeds. In the Gemara, Rava teaches, however, that if the community leaders, the Shiva Tovei Ha'ir, arrange the sale of a synagogue with the approval of the community, it can even be used l'mishte be'shichra, to drink beer. In other words, if it is for the good of the community, even if it is for the most mundane of needs, the community leaders are permitted to use the proceeds from such a sale according to their discretion. After serious examination of the rulings presented by the Gemara on the topic, Nachmanides concludes that a synagogue does not contain inherent holiness. Rather, the Kedusha that is invested therein stems from its use as a place of study and prayer. Once the building has been sold in a manner accepted by the sages, by the leaders of the community, and it's no longer being used for such purposes, the holiness is no longer extant and it can be used for any purpose. In the end, if there is no worship in the building and no sacred items, the building is, after all, just a building. These questions come up frequently in contemporary halachic responsa, as communities sometimes have to make difficult decisions when a synagogue is no longer in use and funds are needed to pay back debts or support the community in different ways. In contrast, a Sefer Torah, Torah scroll, or sacred book acquires holiness when written, and it never really loses that holiness, which is why there's a practice to bury certain items that are defined as holy rather than throw them in the garbage. Given its holiness, a synagogue should not be used for private or profane purposes. Eating and drinking in a synagogue should be avoided. One should not take refuge there on a rainy or hot day. It should not be used for a private funeral, although a larger funeral can be held there. These are different rulings that are laid down in order to protect the sanctity of a building that is being used as a holy space. On the other hand, The synagogue was used to house poor students and scholars. It is written in the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, that Rav Imi instructed the teachers of youngsters to permit even a marginal scholar to enter the synagogue with his donkey and tools to spend the night, because an earlier sage, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, said that synagogues and study halls are built to be used by Talmud scholars to eat and drink and sleep there. In the tractate Kiddushin, Rav Abba Bar Yaakov was forced to spend the night in the study hall, which served also as a synagogue, when no one would invite him home. He ends up defeating a demon through prayer because he's stuck in this space all night. It's a great story. And Rava said in the Gemara that sages and their students are permitted to benefit from the synagogue as well. It was actually customary for students to eat and sleep in the synagogue, particularly when a community was too poor to offer hospitality. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein quoted these Gemaras in a responsa he wrote regarding the permissibility for a blind person to bring a seeing eye dog into the synagogue, pointing out that if a traveler could bring his donkey in for the night and passersby could eat, drink, and sleep there when necessary, in order to preserve the human dignity of the blind person and give him independence, these sources can be relied on to allow what on the face of it seems to be disrespectful behavior. I would conclude this podcast by urging us to think more thoughtfully about our shared spaces and whether we sometimes put too much store in preserving external holiness rather than focusing on the internal sanctity that lies within the words of the Torah or the soul of a human being and can never be extracted. Thank you for joining me. Looking forward to the next podcast when we finish chapter 3.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and a big thanks to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in every day to stay on track with your learning and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about other ways to learn with Pardes.